Leech's Bastards go to the movies, live from the Carolina Cinemas, Asheville, with Ken Hankey and Justin Souther, co-heared and produced by Shanghai Steve Schanerfeld.
Right, who are you?
I'm Jeremy Dillon. I'm from, not New Zealand, Australia.
Same difference.
Is that the one where they put the Queen on the money?
It's one of the ones where they put the Queen on the money.
I used to have a big penny that had a picture of the Queen on one side and a kangaroo on the other.
I had one of those too. I don't know if it was a penny though.
Mine was a penny.
I'm pretty sure we don't have pennies anymore in Australia.
Well, I can't help that. I may still have this somewhere. It was really old. I think it had a picture of Queen Victoria on it.
Right, okay.
They're the Canada of the Southern Hemisphere, I believe. Because Canada no longer has pennies.
Good on them. I think once you get to the point where something costs more to produce than it's actually worth, there's some kind of logical inconsistency in keeping it around.
We're all about not being logical.
Are you talking about this place? Or this or production? I mean, of course we don't.
Wow, that worked on two levels. I like
it's
that.
It's a metaphor for the entire podcast.
It's a metaphor for the entire world.
And we should note that as of the old podcasts, of course, you know, we were being paid to, or I was being paid to produce, kind of. And nobody here, we're all volunteer. This is an act of passion.
Wait, sorry, what?
You're getting food, remember?
I think I might have to leave early.
We programmed this motherfucking movie for you. You're going to have to stay for that,
so
regardless.
What's the movie tonight?
Hannah and her sisters.
So just for context, tonight is the Asheville Film Society screening, which you guys do here at the Carolina Asheville, in Asheville, North Carolina,
every Tuesday.
So if you live as far away as Australia, you're welcome to come.
That's right.
No further. If you live in Hong Kong, don't bother.
Yeah, you're screwed. And New Zealand is dicey.
It is. That's true. New Zealand is dicey.
Steve loves Asians. For the record, I don't want people listening in Hong Kong. He reads enough comic books to where we know.
I thought he'd given up comic books.
I did.
I just haven't given up Asians.
I'm saying, well. Yeah.
That was really funny, though. It didn't go anywhere, but I could have, if I'd been able to do anything with that, I would have, man.
Yeah, sure.
Well, the point I'm trying to make is.
That's what you said about the last Asian you saw, too.
That every nerd I've ever known. Had a thing for Asians.
Where's Heath?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not really my thing. I mean, they're fine. I don't have the yellow fever, as they call it.
Did you know at one point in your life?
No.
No?
No, I knew actual Asians, and so the romance was kind of lost. You're like, well, this is kind of hard to romanticize when, like, they're just people that...
You're angering so many Asians right now.
Why did you
get to know them?
They're not interesting anymore. The exoticism is all rubbed
off.
This
is going somewhere.
So... Hannah and her sisters. In your review, you said that it may not be the best
Woody
of Woody Allen's films.
Woody Allen is married to an Asian.
That's right.
Young Asian lady.
That's right. He is.
Very controversially.
Yes, because it's one of those children that his ex-wife adopted.
I had a thought the other day.
Or collected.
Wondering, and I don't know if there's any way to quantify this. I was wondering if who has made more great art. People with bizarre sexual, not even bizarre, out of the mainstream sexual proclivities, or drug addicts?
I think the former probably wins because it's not as debilitating as a rule.
Okay. But it's something to look into.
Final stage of syphilis, you know, that's a downside, but yeah.
Right. You know. Well, I mean, you don't always get syphilis. I mean,
no, I realize that. I mean,
Roman Polanski.
What about it? How do you know he's never had syphilis?
Well, that's true. He doesn't seem to... He seems to be healthy.
I've never had syphilis.
Are we saying you're a great artist?
No.
I mean, you can say that if you want.
I'm kind of a tramp, or I have been.
But I think we can all agree that if you are a sexually deviant drug addict, the odds of you creating great art are really astronomical.
And there's also a lot of sexual deviants we don't know are... They're just sneakier.
Well, yeah, but you have to also remember, I mean, it's kind of like what Steve's on about there. It's like the old James Baldwin thing where I think it was Dick Cavett asked him if he thought it was a great drawback because he was black, poor, and gay. And he said no. He thought he'd hit the jackpot.
Right.
doing. How much more outre could you be?
So you're saying that if you're just some boring old fart, that you're not going to make anything great. I think we can agree on that.
I think that's probably true. I don't think anybody's going to wrestle you to the floor over that one. You going to wrestle him?
No, my wrestling days are over.
What's the greatest thing made by a boring person?
X-Men 3, Brett Ratner.
No, I think Tower Heist is better.
That's more like a boring frat boy.
He probably has some weird sexual stuff going on.
I bet
he does. According to Olivia Munn, I don't know if you read that whole thing.
Yes, good lord.
Yeah. I don't think Ken's in on this. I forget even what.
I have no idea who Olivia Munn is, so I'm...
She's been in some movies.
She's in the new Aaron Sorkin show, actually. The Newsroom, which starts in a few weeks on HBO.
She's most famous for being the female anchor on Attack of the Show, which was a nerd-oriented show. It's actually really fun.
She's more famous now for having her phone hacked and all of her dirty photos taken off of it.
Oh, so. Okay.
She was dating that dude from
like
Star Trek, right?
Brett Ratner, please.
William Shatner.
But yes. She dated, what was it? She dated...
Chris Pine, right?
Well, but she had dated Brett Ratner, and Brett Ratner went on TV around his... And people had forgotten about Brett Ratner, and then he got hired to direct the Oscars and then made an ass out of himself within about a month. This was part of it, was discussing her sexually, their intimate interests.
In her autobiography, she mentions meeting this... I haven't read the autobiography, but
this surface... This woman has written an autobiography?
Apparently it wasn't very good.
And then I stooped. I mean, what is it, you know?
She can't be more than, 28, and she...
If that, yeah.
Why would you write an autobiography?
Because there's money in it. I mean... Why,
arrogance?
What else do you do when you're... I mean, it's not like she's famous for acting.
Well, no.
But anyways, apparently she walked in on a room and he just told it, like, when they first met, and he just started masturbating. Like, she was at some trailer to interview him or something. Like, I think this was she was working on Attack of the Show.
I think I knew him one time.
Right.
Someone rather like that.
So it's also possible that you can be a pervert and not make great art.
Clearly.
So what we've gotten to is that sometimes you're a weirdo and talented, and sometimes you're a weirdo
and you're not just talented.
An ass.
That's true.
So,
who's the most normal seeming director type person you can think?
Spielberg.
Well,
he's the.
I bet he's.
We've
not
had
that
this talk
normal.
Before where you. He's the least sexual director.
Him next and, to Tim Burton.
Yeah. Right. Which
Burton
explains
is
that.
Is the most sexless director on the planet, I think.
He's certainly not the most normal seeming though.
Yeah, I. What makes you say that? I think
this is a man who can make a movie about a man who dresses in women's clothes, and the entire film is completely unerotic.
Yeah, but he also made Edward Scissorhands, which fetishized
it's
like
not erotic though. It is. It's.
I know plenty of women. I know plenty of women who disagree with you.
Well,
on that.
I can't help you.
That may be the Johnny Depp factor.
That there are women who have some bizarre fantasies.
So maybe it's Johnny Depp that brings what sexuality there is to a Tim Burton film.
Well, that brings what sexuality it is these women are reading out of it. The only film of his that has any sexual content at all that isn't on a junior high school level is Big Fish.
Well, there's a scene in Mars Attacks, right?
Yeah, which is horny Martians steaming up their helmets watching some people hump. You know, and that to me is like that's the essence of where Burton's sexual fantasies lie. They have not progressed beyond that stage.
The Big Fish may come down more to John August rather than Tim Burton. He wrote the screenplay.
Yes, I know.
That's a discussion for another time. We're not going to
argue
about that right now.
Because we're getting way off topic from the non-agenda we have.
Well, I can see this. I've seen these two argue about
the...
yes.
The downside of his inability to understand the auteur theory.
Oh, Christ.
This is why we'll save this for another time.
Okay.
Next time Jeremy's here.
Next time he's here, we'll go 10 rounds.
Okay, 10
on
rounds
why
of
this
auteurism.
Worship that you have for writers is just beyond the pale.
Is inferior to your worship for directors?
Yes, it is, actually.
Okay.
Anyway, back to... perverts.
You know, actually, the main thing I was cheesed about today that I was going to vent about were these goddamn fanboys that have attacked everybody who has written a bad review of the Avengers.
Well,
how are you surprised at that?
I am not surprised by it, but what I do not understand is what is this mania? Oh, I ruined our 100%. Who cares? Why do they care?
Virgins care about that.
Apparently these people have never been laid or gotten out of their mother's basements. I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. I saw Whit Stillman's Damsels in Distress this past weekend. Uh-huh. I absolutely adored it. It's got a 74% approval rating. I don't give a shit. I think there's a 75% chance that, no, I'd say there's an 85% chance that Justin will like it. But if he doesn't like it, I'm not going to never speak to him again. I'll just look dirty at him and say, well, now you've been wrong twice.
He'll dismiss my opinion, but he'll still talk to me.
Yes, I won't respect his opinion in this matter, yeah. But I will talk to him, and I will not say bad things about him. I mean, I've only ever seriously known him
to be wrong.
At least
not specifically over that.
No.
Well, here's
but I've only specifically ever known him to be wrong about one movie.
Which is?
Oh, you don't want to go there because you and I will have to attack him.
I'll take your side, Justin. I don't. Which one is it? It's Casino Royale, right?
Yeah, the 1957 Casino Royale. Yeah.
It doesn't work for me.
I'm with you on that one, and that's not even me playing. It's goofy.
And that's a bad thing?
No, but
it's the whole point. It takes the stupid James Bond series. Now, this is where Jeremy and I disagree, because he thinks the James Bond series has some kind of merit. To me, it puts the James Bond series right where it belongs.
Do you know who's making the next James Bond movie?
I know it's somebody depressing.
Sam Mendes, who wants to get to the dark side of James Bond, maybe the most boring sounding movie.
You get a James Bond movie with
all
the air
sucked
out of
it. Where are you getting that from? Because from all that I've heard, he wants to go back to the Goldfinger on a Majesty's Secret
Service. Have you ever seen a Sam Mendes movie?
Yeah.
He's going to suck all the air out of Bond is what he's going to do.
I don't believe so. Roger Deakins is doing the cinematography. That should get you on the side.
It's not going to change the fact that this is the man who made American Beauty, which is a piece of garbage.
I love that.
The man who made Revolutionary
Road,
which is a piece
statement.
Of garbage.
I haven't seen that.
The man who made, what was that?
Road to Perdition?
I don't know if I would call
Road
American
to Perdition
Beauty
is not bad.
Garbage,
I like Road
but
to Perdition a lot.
It doesn't work for me either.
What's that?
It's American Beauty. I wouldn't call it awful, but it's also
I'd call
sort
it awful.
Of like, I haven't seen
but
it
then
in a
again,
while,
almost anything with Kevin Spacey in it, I'm ready to call awful.
Well, the long knives are out.
You wanted it. You got it.
That's not a long knife. This is a long knife.
Is that a setup?
Here I was. No, I wish it was. Do you have any idea how much I wish that was a setup?
No, that was totally a rebound by Mr. Dillon over here. It's brilliant.
He's been saving that his entire trip here.
His entire life.
He goes to Waffle House and they ask for a knife.
You pull it there too, huh?
I hope so. I would get the good out of it.
So back to Hannah and her sisters.
Oh, right.
Were we talking about that?
Why do you like this movie? I saw it years ago. I don't really remember much about it. But as you know, I'm kind of a big
Woody
one about
Allen.
It.
Yeah, that doesn't need a whole lot more than that. I mean, there are people who say it's his best film, and it seems to be, the tendency seems to be going in that direction. I personally prefer Manhattan and Stardust Memories just off the top of my head, but we've already shown those, so he was SOL. My biggest complaint with it is I'm going to knock a point off for making me sit through Bobby Short crucifying a Cole Porter song. I mean, yeah, that's it. You know, right there. If I even have to listen to Bobby Short, that's definitely not a good thing.
When I edited your review, I had to look up who Bobby Short was. I was like, what? Who? And apparently, apparently you're not alone in disliking Bobby Short. Although
I've heard him called an acquired taste.
Like snuff.
Or oysters. Yeah, one of my two favorite Ken Russell-isms is, well, my top favorite is about Christian Bale's Batman. But my other favorite is, I had an oyster in 1955 and I haven't gotten over it yet. He said that in 2009.
You know, there's a new Batman trailer.
Just slap me around now.
I don't want to talk about... Well, I kind of want to talk about the Batman trailer. I want to talk about there's a new Prometheus trailer, which people are always like, oh, it's full of spoilers. Which, instinctively...
What, it has something to do with the Alien series, and it was made by Ridley Scott. What do you want?
Well, if you haven't seen the movie, how do you know
it's spoilers where you don't.
There's things in it, and then so you assume that you know.
Well,
so
what I don't understand is
they fair though, it's Ridley Scott. You know where it's going anyway.
Yeah,
I mean, like you're not gonna be like. But,
I guarantee you, the best thing about this movie is gonna be the trailers.
Sure. Like, but it's kind of like, you know, but they'll yell spoiler about anything. It's like any critic who mentioned a certain person who shows up in the last few minutes of Cabin in the Woods,
right,
got crucified for spoilers. It's on the goddamn IMDb page.
Right.
She's in the cast list on there.
Yeah. Well, ooh, I mean,
I just spoiled something. I revealed the gender of this special guest.
Did we talk about this last week? That philosophically, if you can spoil a movie with that tiny amount of information, that the movie's not worth you watching.
The whole thing is, if the movie is only good for the surprises that it inflicts on you, it's not really much of a movie.
I would, well, that's true, but that I don't think that negates spoiling. Spoilers for a film do diminish the first experience. That first experience of watching a film is unique precisely because you don't know where it's going.
But you see, this is a personal thing, I admit. But generally speaking, I would like to have the first viewing out of the way. I have almost never seen a film that was of any substance that I didn't like much better the second time I saw it. Because I'm not concerned about where the plot's going. I'm not concerned with how long it's going to take to get there.
Now, I can draw this back into something earlier. Watch this. Do you think that's because he likes writers more than you?
Oh, I saw what you did there. That was good.
Could be.
Jeremy?
We've had this argument before, and...
Maybe we will argue about this, so...
We have not had this argument. We've had the writer argument.
We're not arguing. Well, we're discussing.
But
this
I think it'll
turn into argument.
Whether you
turn into a slap fight.
Whether your primary... the primary thing you draw from... Whether you see film as primarily a storytelling medium or not.
Yes, but you do. That's because you watch all that crap on television, which that's what it is a storytelling medium on television. It certainly isn't a visual medium.
Well, that's you say that, but it's a bit hard to take you seriously because you don't watch television.
I've seen enough.
When have you seen enough from...
Oh, I did follow American Horror Story last year. I
haven't seen that.
Yeah, well.
Is that that's the Ryan Murphy show? Yeah.
The first episode was not bad. It went downhill real fast. But it wasn't particularly cinematic.
Okay, well...
And Ryan Murphy's films have been fairly cinematic.
Okay.
Granted that... Eat, Pray, Love movie was a piece of crap, but that you can only do so much with Julia Roberts and an elephant.
I beg to differ.
Yeah, well, your erotic fantasies don't enter into this.
And so we're back to perverts now.
Yeah.
So clearly I'm a genius. Wow. I'm glad we came to this logical conclusion.
I've known you too long to buy this.
Can we talk about television for a minute? Because I'm sort of in the same boat as Ken. I've tried. My wife loves television. I can't get into it because... I need to know where things are going, which is also a reason I don't... One of the reasons I don't like Casino Royale is because I need, like, a direction. And with television so
often...
Yeah,
that makes no sense. That makes no sense whatsoever because...
The first time I watched it...
Okay, but it's... Okay, here's the thing, though.
Okay.
You gonna tell me you had any idea where The Magic Christian was going first time you watched it?
It's so much shorter, though.
No,
on Monty Python
really
and the Holy Grail?
Minutes.
I don't know. It's so much... There's a lot of digressions in Casino Royale that.
Yeah, but
The
Magic Christian is one long digression.
But it's a much shorter long digression.
It's also 99 minutes versus 131, you know.
I also.
It makes a difference.
Granted, I've only seen The Magic Christian once, but. And it was fine. I don't have the love for it that you guys have.
Yeah, well, it's not your. No. It's not your shtick. I could have told you that.
But I actually am less bothered by that than I was by Casino Royale, because at least I knew they were just like, this is just fucking weird. We're just going to be weird for however long the movie is. Was it 90 minutes, something like that? Like, it's not...
And I'm not saying I'll never like Casino Royale. It might happen one day. I've given it two shots so far.
To me, it's like, what's not to like? I fell in love with this movie when I first saw it in 1967. My parents hated it.
I like it better than I liked Austin Powers.
I liked it better than
the
new Casino Royale.
Yeah, that's true. Now, Jeremy will not agree with you there.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, although I did like the Martin Campbell Casino Royale quite a lot, but I wouldn't necessarily say I liked it.
I tried to watch it a second time. That was not happening.
Mm. I wouldn't say I necessarily liked it significantly more or less than the Woody Allen Casino Royale, or the David Niven Casino Royale, or however we want to label it. Because it's got about 7 directors and 15 screenwriters and a cast of thousands.
And a completely uncredited director on the climactic section. It is the most magnificent refutation of the auteur theory out there. It is a film that should under no circumstance work, and somehow it does.
Yes, that's very true.
Yeah, I think I'm with you for the first part, the first clause. I don't think it does. It's okay, but it's too weird. And it's not even weird. That's a bad word.
Yeah, you keep saying weird like
it's
there's something
weird.
Wrong
no,
with
it's
that.
Not that it's weird. I like weird. It's that it's just like, for me, when I watch a movie, I want to know that I'm being told this for a reason. Like, why was this worth all this money and my time? You can spend all the money you want to, but
because
like...
Because it made a shitload of money, that's why. It was the second most popular film of 1967, believe it or not.
I believe it, but they also threw everything they had at the screen. But I was like,
which
okay,
is wonderful.
Well, that's fine, but
it's overkill. It is such glorious overkill.
But you see, it's hard to make. That's an easy argument to make when it works, but most of the time, that strategy for filmmaking doesn't bear the same.
No, most of the time it does not.
Not like I don't normally like things that.
Yeah, I've never. I will probably never completely understand why you don't like this.
I don't know if I completely understand.
I think one of the things though that you have to, that has to be in place here, and it might not be for you. I don't know if it is for you, and that is that you're absolutely in love with musical score, every aspect of it.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think the score for Casino Royale is great. If we're going to think of it as part of the Bond series, it's got one of the best scores of the entire run. That Baccarat.
I think it's one of the best scores.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be on a Bond film. I think it's just one of the best scores.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So Hannah and her sisters. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Or let's talk about television. I was talking about television.
Okay. Do you have a greater point to make with that?
I'd like to hear it.
Let me remember if I have a greater point. No, just
you
I
like
have to
know
feel
where
like,
it's going,
yeah.
And it has to be something that involves
like,
closure.
Yeah. Right. So. There's so many shows that get canceled before they, and there's so many shows that
if
end
they
before they.
If they were going to have a closure,
right? You like The Wire, right, Jeremy?
Yeah, I actually just recently watched all 5 seasons of The Wire in the space of a fortnight.
I watched all of those, not as television entertainment, which I think is a mistake a lot of people make. But that's you can go read David Simon's blog if you want to get into that. But that I knew had a beginning, a middle, an end. It was going somewhere the entire time, and I was fine with that. There's stuff like, I'm not going to start watching American Horror Story till I know it's...
Well, American Horror Story, for as much as I say it went downhill, had the good sense to be 6 episodes long,
right.
And the new season will be a brand new story.
Right.
And I think that's wise.
There's so little, like...
However, it didn't work so well for the Halloween series.
Well, I watched the first season of Lost.
Oh dear.
And got to the end of that, and I was like, wait a second, they don't have a fucking clue what they're doing.
And you are absolutely correct. Did you get to the end of it?
No. No, I stopped after the first season, and I sort of like vaguely, occasionally kept track of what...
The entire time, they're like, no, this is totally going somewhere. It's going to have this. And you get to the end of it, and you're like, that was it?
Right.
That's what you spent all this time telling. And it's the exact same problem I have with a lot of the movies we're talking about. It's like, why did you tell me this? All these things are like long, shaggy dog stories, and Lost is the king of the terrible.
Right.
And even Battlestar Galactica, which is a show I really like, has that same element at the end of it. Because you're like, what was that? Like, this is where you were going?
Right.
Really?
My thing with Lost is, I signed up for it thinking I was going to get the straight version of Gilligan's Island, which I thought, yeah, that sounds like a really interesting concept for a show. And then, there was like polar
did it have
bears.
A catchy theme song?
And just. No, they didn't really have a theme song.
No, well, that was a mistake right there.
Okay. You know, what I would have really liked was, apparently the original idea was they're going to kill lead character off in the pilot, and he's going to be played by Michael Keaton. And great. That way then I could have just watched the pilot and stopped watching after that. Because there was this great article in The Onion a couple of years ago, and the headline was, study shows that 86% of all films would be improved by the addition of Michael Keaton. And I can't disagree with that.
You know, Justin has a slightly different theory.
Multiplicity, I think. ruins that. Well, maybe no, if you get too much.
No, I wasn't talking about Michael Keaton. Justin has a different theory about what would improve all movies.
Does it involve simians?
No, that's mine.
No, that's his. If Cronenberg made them?
Yes. Yeah. He thinks all movies, all cinema would be better if Cronenberg made everything.
David Cronenberg's Tommy?
Be different. I don't know. There's some things you can't, but Forrest Gump.
Yeah, that would definitely be an improvement. Yui Bowl would be an improvement on that.
Let's see. Eat, Pray, Love would be better.
Actually, yes.
Yes, it would, yes. And then we would get to see
Titanic.
When Julia Roberts turns into an elephant.
Right. Titanic would be better.
Or grows a trunk. Talk about body horror.
Okay, well, there you go.
Titanic would definitely be better by David Cronenberg. Now, my theory is much simpler, and that is that all movies should end with a monkey stampede.
And a musical number. If you could combine the two.
Yeah.
Maybe.
A monkey stampede musical number.
Well, the monkeys could stampede the musical number.
You got to get
some stampede sound effects and a musical number to end this podcast.
I mean, just think about this for a minute, though. Just imagine, if you will, how much more satisfying it would be if in the middle of Frankly, My Dear, I Don't Give a Damn, they were all trampled by monkeys.
Yes!
Think about
that. See, I've seen that, and it just ends up being that horrible Indiana Jones movie.
No.
There's a monkey stampede in that.
No, it's not a real monkey stampede.
Your theory has been tested, and I think it comes up lacking.
Not a monkey stampede, and it's
his
not
theory,
out of...
His theory is would improve. So you could say without the monkey stampede, the film would be worse.
That's true. The film would be worse without the monkey stampede. Simian value did give it a little bit of an edge.
I think that...
However, I think Steve is in the right age group and of the right mindset that I can almost guarantee you that Indiana Jones and the incredibly overlong title did something horrible to his childhood.
Are you one
childhood
of those...
Which one?
The last one.
Are you one of those George Lucas...
The one nobody can remember the title to.
Yeah.
It's
Indiana
of the
Jones
Christmas
and the Fountain of Geritol.
I really only like the first one. I mean, Temple of Doom is okay, I guess. And I forget everything I ever... I forget The Last Crusade except for like one scene.
Oh, that's great. Sean Connery.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's actually the only one where it's just like, we named the dog Indiana and that's it. That's all I've got.
I love that. Because one of the great things about that is Sean Connery plays Harrison Ford's father and he's about 8 years older than him. So that would have been an interesting conception.
Well, you know.
So
Anne Margaret played Roger Daltrey's mother.
That's true.
And there's like a two-year age difference or something.
There's no scene of Sean Connery rolling around in baked beans.
More than pity. That would definitely improve that film.
So
baked beans rolling might also be a good...
Things that would improve
good,
an
yes.
Indiana Jones movie.
Monkey stampede over in a vat of baked beans.
Now,
cold
now here's,
water song
here's the
plays
thing.
In the back.
Now, here's my feeling about
and
Temple
Woody
of...
Woody Allen
Temple,
shows up at
wait
the
a minute. Let's go back to Temple of Doom for a second.
Wait, what if Woody Allen was a Nazi at the end of an Indiana Jones movie?
My favorite... We've been on the road trip down from Nashville the other day. My producer and I were listening to the Woody Allen stand-up box set, and one of my favorite lines in there: my wife and I were married by a reform rabbi, very reform rabbi. He was a Nazi.
I can go along with that, okay. But now wait a minute. Let's go back to the Temple of Doom just for a second here.
Okay.
Now.
I do remember Short Round and the thing where
they ate the snake.
If you see that movie when you're like 7 years old, it's pretty great because...
Yeah. Now listen to me.
And I did, actually.
Yeah. It starts out with Kate Capshaw singing Anything Goes in Chinese. Now, that's pretty darn good.
That's brilliant.
The first whole section of that film is fine. That first sequence is beautifully done.
Sure.
I think
then Short Round shows up, and that's where the monkey stampede comes in. If the monkeys had stampeded Short Round.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it does have monkey brains.
It would have improved. Yes, but that's grotesque.
Which I read about. You know who did monkey brains before that? Mm. Faces of Death? There was a monkey brain.
Yeah, no. Something I ran
that's
the drive-in predated
oh, really?
Even that.
Okay.
Well, I think it was called The Man from Snowy River or something.
Well, Faces
it was really
of Death.
Awful.
With Tom Berlinson.
It was something that was out by 1974 because that was my drive-in period.
Well, Faces of Death tries to claim monkey brains. You might want to...
No, Faces of Death is crap.
Well, I know, but...
Okay.
Tom Berlinson, who played the man from Snowy River, Now too is doing a Frank Sinatra tribute show. He does the voice quite well.
Wow. That's just downright weird, that is.
So you wanted to talk about a movie trailer. I think we should talk about that. Oh, you already did?
Oh, no, yeah.
I'm already...
We're past that, Steve.
I'm sorry. I jumped back in time.
You did. So, Hannah and Her Sisters.
That's the one. Hannah and Her Sisters.
Talk about this movie.
I've never
I don't
seen
know
a
why.
Trailer for Hannah.
Hey, here's the thing. No, I mean, we can talk about Hannah and Her Sisters all you want. That's fine. I have no problem
Who
with
Who do you
that.
Like better, Hannah or Her Sisters?
How about all three of them at once? No, Mia Farrow.
Well, this movie has...
And an elephant and Julia Roberts.
There you go. I'd pay money to watch this. Steve's getting excited.
I'm just trying to decide whether or not that's a mark of genius.
One of Ken's favorite moments is in that Omen remake where Mia Farrow gets hit by a car.
No, she gets kicked in the face.
Oh, yeah, is that what it is?
Yeah.
And then she gets hit by a car.
Then she gets hit by a car, yeah.
It's like the end of...
But yeah, at the same time,
end of the
I really
Naked Gun
like
with
her,
O.J. Simpson.
But I really like her in Be Kind Rewind.
Oh, yeah, she is in that.
Yeah.
Ken has some opinions on Mia Farrow if you want to do a whole show on that sometime.
No, not particularly. I mean,
one of my favorite...
I know all Ken's good material, so I don't want to use it all.
I feel like we'd be remiss if we didn't at least address the other special screening that you guys have going on soon, which is, of course, the Friday the 13th Jason Lives?
Jason, well, it depends. If you
IMDb said it was different.
Okay. The opening credits are Jason Lives, Friday the 13th, Part 6. The closing credits are Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives. Take your pick.
It's like John Carter. Or John Carter of Mars in the
end. Yeah, exactly. I myself always go with the opening credit as being the official title. Which where you and I have had some IMDb differences.
Yes.
Yes.
You have to strive for consistency. So when
this whole
I use
show, the undertones of the show is Ken's conflicts with everybody.
That's true.
That he knows.
I haven't really had any conflict with you except your fact that you're wrong about Casino Royale.
You hate Jeremy's opinions on directors.
No,
Steve's an ass.
We know that. That's not. I don't hate Jeremy's opinions. I just belittle them. There's a difference. He places far too much interest in writers.
And very little interest in overused machete men with hockey masks.
That's true.
So let's talk about that film. Because
who
of the
wrote
things,
that movie?
I have no idea. I'm not even real sure who directed it. It's like the only thing he ever did that wasn't a TV movie. No.
But I think the surprising thing is that I don't think a lot of people would look at... I mean, because the whole idea behind the Thursday Horror Picture Show, which is held here at the Carolina Asheville on Thursdays...
at 8 o'clock. It's on Thursdays, which is amazing because, the name would not lead you to suspect that at all, would it?
It's a great coincidence.
It is. I don't know how it happens either.
But the great thing about it is that usually you're showcasing either forgotten works of horror or underrated works of horror or classic works of horror. And I think very few people would think of any of the Friday the 13th movies, period, as being truly great films or even great horror films.
I would not think so. But at the same time, when they try to reboot the series, as they do now...
And specifically, Cabin in the Woods is something that we had a long discussion about the other day.
Yes, well, we rebooted
2 weeks
right
ago.
Ahead. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Shh, it was last week.
Anyway, yeah. And then, was it only went up?
It was last week on internet time.
I'm trying to shame Steve for not recording us last week.
Yeah, well, that was kind of by mutual consent, but it wasn't his fault. It wasn't really his fault, though, that the
I forget what excuse I used.
The peerless, flawless, incredibly wonderful
right,
express site crashed for a day and a half.
It's a miracle that thing. It's really...
It's literally duct taped together.
I mean,
like, there's literally...
It kind of is.
What was it has to do with chicken wire and...
What was
wrong
with the old one?
Bailing, yeah.
It's pretty much like we just have, like, a 45 RPM, turntable, like, running the actual hard drives at this point. It's really...
With a hamster powering it from the back of the room.
It's great. I love it.
So
Hannah
and
Her Sisters.
Well, we were talking about Friday the 13th.
Yeah. We were talking about Friday
the 13th. What were we talking about?
Steve is questioning why this is in a series of movies that usually showcases decent films.
Not always.
Not always.
Often, Steve doesn't come to these.
Well,
but some of them...
There's a finite amount of really good horror movies. Right.
That's true.
And we've been doing this for 2 years, so we're bound to...
We've had the occasional...
I don't want to say we're scraping the barrel, but out of
these... We still haven't shown the original Mummy. We've still got that to, you know, tide us over. Well, when they rebooted this thing, we can get back to that. You would be surprised, if not horrified, to notice the number of people who refer to the original 1980 classic.
Well, in a sense, it's remembered, so I guess it's...
Well, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
Kevin Bacon's in it, so I mean, you know. A real actor.
Bing Crosby's son is in it, too.
Of that genre, it's...
Bill?
Or...
Hmm? It's you know, it's probably the best movie Betsy Palmer was ever in. You'll see somebody refute that.
Or within acknowledge that subgenre of supernatural slasher, meat on a hoof teenager.
Yes, but it did, but at the same time, it was not really that genre. It doesn't become that genre till the second movie. So that first one was a whodunit,
right?
With a lot of point of view camera work, so that you couldn't tell who was dunning it. Which people like Siskel and Ebert went off on a tear, talking about, oh, it just shows how depraved we have become, that the teenagers who watch this stuff want to be in the position of the killer. This is a terrible thing. No, it was to keep you from knowing who the killer was. Jesus Christ, get a grip.
And it was his mother. The spoiler.
You just ruined this movie for generations of Betsy Palmer fans. Or is it Bess Meyerson?
But if Jason is alive, then doesn't that ruin the entire motivation of his mom in the first movie?
But he's not alive. There is nothing in the first movie to suggest that Jason is alive.
No, I know. But so then how does he come back in the second? I never saw the second movie. I started watching the second one.
Just doesn't make any, doesn't care.
Well, that's convenient.
It's like all the Frankenstein movies.
Yeah, you know, the
Dracula tradition. Yeah.
And the third one, it mainly exists because it was in 3D. Could you resist making Friday the 13th 3D? No, you could not. And the fourth one, which was called The Final Chapter or something like that, which lied, decided to actually kill Jason.
Mm-hmm.
Only, somehow or other, there's a copycat Jason. And in the sixth one, young Tommy Jarvis, who started out being Corey Feldman and now he was aged into this person I've never heard of before or since.
probably good for him not to be Corey Feldman.
That's probably true. Could be worse to be Corey Haim.
He is dead.
Busted out of a loony bin and feels that he can get satisfaction if he sees Jason's moldering corpse.
Corey Feldman busting out of a loony bin. Just very implausible.
This is not Corey
Feldman.
Fake
Corey Feldman.
This is a fake Corey Feldman. This is Corey Feldman as an adult.
Corey
such a thing is conceivable.
How's that?
Yes, whatever.
Jeremy's doing this gun shooting thing over here that makes me wish I had a camera. That's all. It's good.
As long as Jeremy's enjoying himself.
Yeah,
I think he is.
Well, that's fine. I mean, I like the people who enjoy themselves.
You wouldn't gather that from just sitting here listening to him talk, but he really is a kind soul.
He's not determined what kind.
Yeah. So,
but the thing is, in this one is the first time he becomes supernatural.
Right.
Because he digs him up and there's this moldering corpse in there and he ill-advisedly shoves an iron stake into him, which of course gets hit by lightning, which of course jollies him right up out of the grave. And I'm sure that was very fun for, you know, all future screenwriters were delighted by this because you didn't have to work out any sort of reasoning. You know, he's supernatural. He can survive anything.
Well, as we know from Jason X, he can survive the end of the planet Earth.
Yeah, Jason X is an aberration. It's like...
The quest
it runs Jason... It runs Friday the 13th, 1 through 9. No, run through 8.
Mm-hmm.
Then the 10th one, and then Freddy versus Jason.
Mm-hmm.
This makes no sense.
This is like the Final Cut Pro numbering system.
But there is one thing in Jason X's favor.
Okay.
It is self-critiquing.
Oh yeah. But it has that same.
No.
Okay.
You're thinking about the overstated postmodern crap in it.
Yeah, which
I'm thinking.
I was gonna
about
drive. Okay.
The immortal line: "This sucks on so many levels."
It's kind of... Wait, I need to get an opening quote. Can you say that again?
This sucks on so many levels.
It's kind of like that bit in Batman and Robin where Bane is driving Uma Thurman around and just keeps saying, bomb, bomb, bomb.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
So, postmodernism. In Jason 6, or whatever it is we're talking about.
Well, yeah, but it's not the same. Jason X just beats it over the head. It's fairly... It's limited to a few gags in part 6.
Yes.
And they don't... My favorite one is probably the kids hiding under a bed. And one asking the other one, so what did you want to be when you grew up? You know, stuff like that. And, you know... And three Alice Cooper songs. How far wrong can you go here? Especially when you have an Alice Cooper song that includes Cooper going, shh, shh, shh. Now, that's prime.
Mm-hmm. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are 15 minutes into this.
I've got one Hannah and her sisters thing.
Okay, we've got to bring it back.
All right, bring it back around to Hannah and her sisters.
One of my favorite factoids about that film is Michael Caine won the Oscar for it, but he couldn't accept it because he was off shooting Jaws 4, The Revenge. And he got asked one time... Mr. Caine, how do you feel about the fact that you couldn't get your Oscar because you was off filming Jaws 4, which was not a very good movie? He said, well, I haven't seen the picture, and by all accounts it's terrible, but I have seen the house it paid for, and that is fantastic.
That seems only reasonable to me. You know, and Michael Caine is known to be in paycheck mode on more than one occasion. But he is a British actor, and British actors have an entirely different take on this than... We think they should. They view acting as a job of work. They do not particularly care whether it is a good part or a bad part. They'll like a good part, but if they're going to get paid for it, they'll do it. This explains a lot. It explains probably half of Peter O'Toole's filmography.
What the? You really wasn't doing the those 15-minute Sherlock Holmes cartoon movies for?
I wasn't even thinking of that.
Okay.
Okay, so we do need to have one argument before we close this up.
We've had one argument. We've had several arguments.
We have to have a new one. And it doesn't have to be actually a recorded theme music. Theme music. Last time we used the music with the theremin and the thing.
From Scared to Death.
Yeah.
Which I thought was fine.
What did you think?
You could use the opening theme from Lost.
Yeah, no. Steve lives in abject terror of copyright infringement.
Oh, well, right.
I think in the case of the film that we're talking about, Scared to Death, I think
there are
fine.
20 different people selling copies of it on Amazon.
Well, it's also on archive.org, which means that it's had. I mean, its rights are probably.
Did you check the other movie I told you about?
I couldn't find a copy of it that had decent enough audio.
Oh, okay.
There are a couple that have the intro that I was able to find, but it just was too weird. It was just too tinny sounding. I couldn't use it.
But that's the charm. And if we can get those 78s to work, you want to talk about tinny sounding? Ha ha ha.
I can give you something from the soundtrack of Benjamin Siddlegrass and the Cauldron of Penguins.
See, we got that.
There you go. That's...
I still like 1832.
I am not going to talk about that on microphone. It's a friend of Justin's. I'm not going to say anything. I said something.
Was that the theme for the first season?
Yes. I was not a fan.
I just knew that whenever I heard the pew, I knew that Elitist Bastards was starting. I liked that. It's on my iPod. I'm just saying. All right.
Hungry.
I'm
ready.
So thanks everybody for listening to episode 2 of season 2 of the Elitist Bastards Get a Movie. Volume 2.
Episode 2, volume 2, season 2.
I feel like we went
series 2.
Can I get my money now?
The Next Generation.
We're not paying you. We're going to feed you.
Feed me.
Get mad.